Chapter 14. Captain of the Tenth. I do not want this. I have served with loyalty and honor. Throw my ashes into the void. Do not entomb me. Final words of the war sage, Malkarion. The sleeper dreamed. He dreamed of battle and bloodshed. Dreams that warped the boundary between memory and nightmare within his sluggish mind. A world, a battlefield, the battlefield, armies of millions laying waste to each other in a relentless grind. Balta fire, balta fire, balta fire, so loud it bleeds into other senses, so loud it becomes blinding, so loud it tastes of ash. The sound of Balta's firing is more familiar to him than the sound of his own voice, so deeply is it ingrained within him. The spires of a palace that spans a continent, the towers of a fortress like no other, a bastion of gold and stone to rival the imaginations of even the greediest gods. He would die here. This he knew, for it was memory. He would die here, but would not be granted peace. And still the Balters fired. The ornate platinum surface of the sarcophagus stared back in silence, still draped in thin, gentle tendrils of wisping steam, as the stasis field powered down. It was ornate and beautiful, in the way Storm's eye would never be. The land raider, enhanced by vicious spikes and ornate armor restructuring, was artistry of a sort, reveling in the Legion's reputation, fitted with chain racks to display crucified enemies, even as the battle tank cut down hundreds more. Storm's eye was limitless aggression and the infliction of woe upon the enemy. The machine spirit within, reflected by the Ceramite without. But this was artistry of a different, nobler breed. The sarcophagus was rendered in platinum and bronze, depicting one of the greatest days of battle ever to take place in the history of Tenth Company. A warrior in ancient warplate stood, head raised back to the sky, clutching two Astartes helms. His right boot rested upon a third, driving it into the ground. The image had never been defiled with exaggeration. No mound of skulls, no cheering crowds, just a warrior alone with his victory. The helm in his right hand sported a jagged lightning bolt etched onto its forehead, with a barbaric rune upon its cheek. The helm of Zoramai Khan, swordmaster captain of the White Scars Ninth Company. The helm in his left hand was crested and proud, even when torn from the body of its wearer. It was marked only with a clenched fist upon the faceplate, and the high Gothic rune for Paladin. Here was the helm of Lathandrus the Templar, a renowned champion of the Imperial Fists Legion. Lastly, beneath the warrior's boot, the helm of a third Astartes. This helm was winged, marked by a tear-shaped drop of blood, displayed here as a ruby on the helm's forehead. Raguel the Sufferer, captain of the Blood Angels, Seventh Company. The warrior had slain these three souls in the span of a single day. A single day of hive warfare outside the walls of the Imperial Palace, and the warrior had cut down three champions of the loyalist Astartes legions. Clanking cranes lifted the huge sarcophagus from its stasis pit in the marble floor of the Hall of Remembrance. Servitors operated the lifting equipment, their monotasked mechanical precision a necessary part of the ritual of reawakening. Talos watched the hulking coffin of platinum, bronze, and black ceramite, the size of two Astartes in full terminator plate, as it was lifted clear of the pit's restraints. Tubes, feeds, and cables, each with a sacred use, trailed down from the sarcophagus as it hung aloft. These fibrous snakes dripped coolant, beads of moisture collecting in the funereal air after such a long immersion in the stasis field. First Claw watched in silent reverence as the sarcophagus was carried across the chamber and lowered with programmed care. Several more servitors waited below the lowering coffin, clustered around the towering form of an armored carapace, three times the height of an Astartes. Their hands replaced with industrial claws and technical tools, busied over the machine body, making the final preparations for the sarcophagus's mounting upon its front. Dreadnought. The word itself sent a pulse of ice through his blood. But it was nothing compared to the reality before his eyes. A dreadnought, the ultimate blend of man and machine. The form of an Astartes hero, encased within an ornate sarcophagus, and forever suspended in amniotic fluids on the very edge of death, controlling the nigh invulnerable ceramite body of a walking war machine. The ritual so far had taken almost 2 hours, and Talos knew several still lay ahead. He watched the servitors at work, machining clamps into place, locking struts, testing interface ports. "My lord," said Tech Priest Deltrian, "all is ready for the third juncture of the ritual of reawakening." The man, robed in black, had augmented himself to the height of an Astartes, with none of the inhuman muscle bulk. To Talos, he resembled the skeletal harvester of life from pre-imperial Terran mythology. It was an image shared across the stars by so many colonized worlds, even those that had evolved independently of far, far distant Earth. A reaper of souls. Deltrian's face, visible from under the black cowl, seemed to play to this conceit for reasons Talos had never fathomed. A silver skull grinned at the Astartes. The face was formed from chrome and plasteel, shaped to the man's facial bones, perhaps even replacing skin and bone itself. A voxponder unit, like a coal-black beetle on his still-human throat, emitted Deltrian's mechanical voice. The unblinking eyes were glittering emerald lenses, dewy with a faint sheen from the moisture spray that hissed subtly from Deltrian's tear ducts once every 15 seconds. Talos had no idea why the tech priest's eye lenses must be kept moist. They were hardly human eyes in need of lids and juices to prevent them drying out. As with all of Deltrian's inhumanities, it was something Talos respected as personal, despite his curiosity.
"You have the Legion's thanks, honored tech priest," the Astartes said, continuing the traditional phrases expected of him. He glanced around the marble-floored chamber, its walls thick with arcane machinery, pits sloping into the floor holding even more wondrous technology. He looked back to the tech priest and added on a whim, "Our thanks, as always, Deltrian. You are a dutiful and trusted ally to us." Deltrian froze, machine still. The servitors banged and clanged and fused and attached and drilled. The tech priest's emerald lenses clicked and whirred, as if seeking to adopt some form of facial expression. The skull of his face never stopped grinning.
"You have violated the traditional exchange of vocalized linguistics."
"I merely meant to show gratitude for the duties you perform, duties that too often remain thankless."
Talos's black eyes didn't break the sincere stare.
"I apologize if I caused you offense."
"It was not an error to amend the vocalized linguistical exchange."
"No, it was intentional."
"Analyzing, processed. In reply, I would state, thank you for your recognition, Astartes 1210.
"Astartes 1210. Talos smiled as understanding dawned. First Claw, Second Astartes, 10th Company. His original squad designation.
Talos, the Night Lord said. My name is Talos.
Talos, acknowledged, recorded.
Deltrian turned his death's head grin on the lowering sarcophagus.
Through the invocation of the machine god, through the blessed sacrament of unity between the enlightened Mechanicum and the legions of Horus, I shall endeavor to revivify the warrior before us, if the cause aligns with the first oath. Make your vow known to me.
Slipping back into the formal exchange, Talos replied,
In the name of my Primarch, who loved and served Horus as the brother he was, I give you my vow. The Eighth Legion makes war upon the Golden Throne and the Celt of Mars. Return to us, our fallen brother, and Imperial blood shall run. Renew his strength with your secrets, and together we will bleed the false Mechanicum of its lore.
Here Deltrian paused again. Talos wondered if he had spoken the oath incorrectly. He'd studied the texts, but this was the first time he had undertaken the ritual himself.
Your avowal aligns with the first oath. My secrets will be employed in our mutual favor.
Wake him, Deltrian.
Talos met the tech priest's gaze, his voice lowered.
A storm is coming, a reckoning. We need him to stand with us.
This, too, was a break in the prescribed ritual. Deltrian paused to process it.
You are cognitive of the probability of failure. This warrior unit has resisted reawakening on all four previous attempts.
I know.
Talos watched the sarcophagus, golden with great deeds, being fastened in place on its war machine body.
He has never awoken. He did not wish to be entombed.
Deltrian said nothing. To refuse the honor of becoming so close to the machine god made no sense to the Mechanicum priest. With no comprehension of the emotions at play, he simply remained silent until Talos spoke again.
May I ask a question?
Permission is granted, with the acceptance that no law of the blessed Mechanicum shall leave the minds of its holy servants.
I respect that. But I will be leaving an honor guard here to watch over the ritual. Is that an unacceptable breach of tradition?
It was once considered tradition to maintain an honor guard in the Hall of Remembrance at all times,
Deltrian said. In a moment of almost eerie humanity, the machine man tilted his head to the side while the smile remained on his unchanging face.
How times change.
Talos nodded to that, smiling himself.
Thank you for your patience, Deltrian. Sirion, Mercutian, and Zal will remain here. They will not interfere with your work and worship, I assure you.
Your orders are recorded.
I wish you well, honored tech priest. Please, summon me for the final stage of the rite. I wish to be present.
Compliance, the augmented man said.
After several seconds, Deltrian added almost awkwardly,
Talos.
The Astartes turned with a growling whir of armor joints.
Yes.
Deltrian gestured with a long-fingered skeletal hand to a wall-mounted life support pod. Within its glass walls, suspended in amniotic fluids, and connected to external systems by a tangled weave of cables and wires, the naked form of Princeps Argeron Hollison floated in chemical-induced slumber. The tech priest emitted a blurt of machine code from his throat vox, the sound equation of a pleased smile.
This one will have many uses, much to be learned from him. My thanks for the gift of this most valuable weapon.
Return the favor, said Talos, and we'll consider the matter even. We need to discuss matters of rank,
bareheaded, sporting a short black beard salted with flecks of gray. Adamar walked alongside Talos through the darkened halls of the Covenant. They were descending deeper through the ship, heading from the artificer and machinery deck, making their striding way to the mortal crew quarters.
What is there to discuss?
Talos asked. A rare vitality was flowing through him. Hope, something he had not felt in a long time. He had not lied to the tech priest. A storm was coming. He could feel it in his blood. It threatened to break with every beat of his heart. 10th Company would be changed forevermore. The two Astartes' bootsteps echoed from the black steel around them.
I outrank you,
Adamar's voice came as if he were grinding rocks with his teeth.
You do, Talos agreed. Why does that seem to make you uncomfortable? Because rank means nothing with the 10th ruined. Beneath the Exalted is the Atramentar. Above the Exalted is no one but his hateful gods. All else is unworthy of his notice. 9th Claw has been leaderless for 3 months now.
Talos exhaled, shaking his head. Truly, the Legion had fallen apart.
I had no idea. I am 1st Claw now,
Adamar affirmed.
But who leads 1st Claw? The former Brother Sergeant of 7th? Or the former apothecary of 1st? Do I look like I care?
Talos rested his hand on the pommel of sheathed Aurum.
I'd be satisfied with the company holding together for the duration of this war. You lead. You earned your rank. Has it never occurred to you that perhaps you've earned a higher rank than the Exalted grants you? Never,
Talos lied.
Not for a moment. I see the lie in your eyes, brother. You're not gifted with deception. You know full well you should lead 1st Claw. You merely offer me the position from respect. Maybe. But the lie is sincere. You have the rank. Lead, and I would follow. Enough games. I have no wish to lead our squad. But hear me well. Your actions for the betterment of the Legion may be altruistic and made without thoughts of personal glory, but they do not look that way to the Exalted.
They waited at the sealed doors to an elevator, staring at one another in the pitch blackness, seeing each other's features perfectly. Talos breathed slowly before answering. Even the mention of the Exalted was fuel for his suppressed fury.
These are not your words, Adamar. This talk of suspicion and deception. It is not your way to learn of such things. Who is this warning from? Upon whose behalf are you speaking?
From the hallway behind him, a voice said,
Mine.
Talos turned slowly, cursing himself for being too lost in his inner conflicts to have heard another close by. Even though the newcomer was unarmored and wearing only the traditional Legion tunic, the Prophet should have heard his approach.
My behalf. Adamar speaks on my behalf.
Adamar nodded his head in respect, as did Talos, to champion Malik of the Atramentar. Zal and Sirion had never been close. Conversation, such as it was, always remained stilted between them when it occurred at all. Idle chatter was not an Astartes trait, and that tendency was only magnified when the two Astartes in question despised one another. Bolters held to chests, they walked in opposite directions around the marble-tiled chamber of the Hall of Remembrance, passing each other twice on each circuit. Mercutian, his armor sigils yet displaying his allegiance to 7th Claw, stood guard at the great double doors, his helm turned to face the form of the Dreadnought. Deltrian puppeteered his servitors with occasional blaring snarls of machine code. According to his directions, the cyborged minions went about the painstaking process of readying the dreadnought for a full reawakening. Upon its front, the mounted sarcophagus stared across the room, brazen with its glory, in a way Malkarian never was in life. On the sixth time Sirion passed Zarl, he opened a vox channel to his brother.
"Zarl, make this good. What are the chances of this working? Of the War Sage waking?" "Yes. I am skeptical." "As am I."
A pause stretched out, and the channel fell dead after several minutes. Sirion blink clicked it open again.
"The Exalted will not allow it to happen." "That is not news to me, brother."
Zarl sighed over the link.
"Why do you think we are here? Of course the Exalted will attempt to stop this ritual. What still eludes me is why. I can scarcely believe things are falling apart so completely."
"The Exalted fears this. He fears Telos. But he fears the awakening of Malkarion even more. You haven't sensed what I have?"
"I have no desire to. Let us not dwell on talk of your corruption."
"I sense fear. I do not feel it. It's a perception, like people whispering on a detuned vox, where only scraps of meaning break through."
"You are touched by the ruinous powers. Enough!"
Sirion pressed on.
"Zarl, listen, just this once. Whatever war is taking place within the Exalted, it is one Vandred lost long ago. He barely exists as the men we followed into battle after the Siege of Terra."
They passed one another again, neither warrior giving sign of acknowledging the other, despite their argument over the vox. Mercutian still stood in orderly silence.
"Enough!" Zarl snapped. "Do you think I will react favorably to learn you understand the mind and soul of that twisted wretch? Of course you know his secrets. You are as warped as he is. His corruption is on the outside, bared to the eyes and displayed in the ravaging of his flesh. Your decay is within, hidden, and all the darker for that fact."
"Zarl,"
Sirion said, his voice softer.
"My brother, in the name of the Father we share, listen to me now, if never again."
Zarl didn't reply. Sirion watched his silent brother approaching, as they came around to meeting on another half-circuit of the chamber. As they passed, Zarl gripped the rim of Sirion's shoulder guard. It was a strange and awkward moment. Even through the red lenses of both their helms, Sirion felt his brother making eye contact, for the first time in several years.
"Speak," Zarl said. "Justify yourself if you can."
"Imagine," Sirion began, "a secret voice within everyone, a voice that speaks of their fear. When I am with you, with Telos, with Uzas, all is silent. We are Astartes. Where fear fills the mortal shell, we are hollow and cold."
Zarl smirked as Sirion quoted Malkarion's writings. Apt, very apt. Mercutian's voice crackled over the vox.
"Keeping secrets from your new squad mate?"
"No, brother," replied Sirion. "Forgive us this momentary disagreement."
"Of course."
Mercutian's link went dead again.
"Continue,"
Zarl said.
"It's different around mortals. I hear their fears like a chorus of shameful whispers. You kill a mortal and see the light die in his eyes. I hear him silently weeping, hear him whispering of a home world he will never see again, of a wife he was so afraid he would never lay eyes upon one last time. I
Rip these thoughts from every mind. I am near.
The taint of the Psyker, Zar thought. In the years of the Primarch's glory, such wretches would be purged from the Legion, or shaped according to rigid codes of behavior and use. A wild psychic talent was an open door to possession and corruption by the soulless beings of the warp.
Continue,
he said again. The word was much harder to speak this time.
You cannot imagine what the Exalted sounds like to me, brother.
Sirion's own voice was broken and hesitant, struggling to give the concepts a form in words.
He shrieks, lost in the darkness of his own mind. He shouts our names, the names of Legion brothers dead and alive, imploring us to find him, to save him, to kill him.
He took a breath before continuing.
That is what I hear when I stand near him. His torment, his terror at the loss of control he suffers throughout his existence. He is no longer Astartes. His possession has allowed him to feel fear, and it has rendered him truly hollow. Terror bores through him like the tunnels of 100 worms.
Zar realized he was still holding Sirion's shoulder guard. He released it immediately, fighting down the snarl in his voice.
I could easily have lived without that knowledge, brother. As could I. But my revelations were not spoken to make you uncomfortable. The Exalted is two souls. Vandred, shrieking his slow way into oblivion. And something else. Something formed from his hatred and meshed with the mind of another. When Talos threatened to awaken Malkarion, it was the first time I have heard both souls howl. Vandred's remnants and the demon that claims him, both feared this moment.
We're here, Zal insisted. We stand watch over the rites of resurrection. If the Exalted truly fears this event and sends dissuasion, it will not matter. Threats and oaths. Who of the Atramentar is truly ignoble enough to make war upon his brothers? Malak? Never. Garadon? He is the Exalted's creature, but he is no match for three of us. Any of the Atramentar would fall, and the Exalted is precious with the lives of his chosen elite.
You assume their lives are equally valued? No, brother, Sirion said. He will send Vral.
Both warriors turned as the great doors rumbled open again. Sirion was already voxing to Talos.
My brother, it's beginning.
The reply was terse.
First claw. At any sign of aggression, you will engage and slay the target. Ave Dominus Nox. Sirion!
Zar racked his bolter as one of the Atramentar entered the Hall of Remembrance.
I hate it when you are right.
Malak shared the lift to the lower levels with Talos and Adamar.
You cannot afford to be this naive, he said,
his face as grim and set as white granite.
I'm not being naive,
Talos said. Despite his respect for Malak, the Atramentar's tone fired his blood. He couldn't keep the edge of defiance from his voice.
I am acting in 10th Company's best interests. You are acting like a blind child.
Malak's voice was iron stern now, and his black eyes glared.
You talk of 10th Company's best interests. That is exactly my point. 10th Company is dead, Talos. Sometimes preservation of the past is a step backwards. I do not advocate change for change's sake. We are talking about the reality of our war.
The Night Haunter would never...
Do not dare speak of our father as if you know him better than I.
Malek's eyes narrowed, and his voice became an animalistic growl.
Do not dare assume you were the only one he held private counsel with in his final nights. Many of us ranked among his chosen, not you alone.
I know this. I am speaking of the legacy he wished for us.
He wished us to survive and to defy the Imperium. That is all. Do you think he cared about the ranks we marched in and the titles we wore while we did our duty? We are barely over 30 Astartes. Squad unity is destroyed. Leadership is weak. Resources are stretched to the limit. We are not 10th Company of the 8th Legion. We haven't been for almost a century of our own time, and 10 millennia of the galaxy's span. Do you truly remain blind to what you are doing?
Malek finished. He shook his head, as if the mere thought was impossible to fathom. I am willing to concede.
The question was rhetorical, Malek grunted. Anyone can see it. You chance upon 100 servitors, just as our resources are almost bled dry. You walk the surface of our shattered home world. And anyone with their eyes open saw that as an omen. Then you steal a navigator. Of all the things to discover. Now a Titan princeps. You rail against the exalted and speak of awakening the war sage.
Adhemar cut in. Tell us, my brother. You are rebuilding the company to your vision. The Navigator was the boldest step. If the Covenant somehow lost Etrigius, the entire company would depend upon you. Upon the Navigator you control. We couldn't even break into the warp without your permission. Etrigius is in fine health, Talos said. But they were words he couldn't back up. Navigators may enjoy inhuman longevity because of their mutations. But Etrigius, who forever kept himself shrouded in his personal observation chambers close to the ship's prow, had barely been seen by anyone except the Exalted in decades. Octavia had access to his section of the ship, but her meager reports through Septimus had mentioned nothing of Etrigius's mental or physical state. He seemed unchanged.
I am of the Atramenta, Malek said, the tones heavy with import.
Talos understood immediately. Malek would never break an oath to reveal the secrets of his liege lord, even if he despised the Exalted. But he was free to let Talos know he had obviously accompanied the Exalted into Etrigius's presence. Perhaps the discovery of Octavia on Nostromo's surface was a more direct threat to the Exalted than Talos had realized. She would need to be guarded, guarded vehemently. And Malkarion's reawakening?
Mercutian, Sirion, and Zal stand watch in the Hall of Remembrance, he said to Malek.
The robed warrior nodded, his statuesque face resigned.
That is probably wise. How long has the ritual been taking place?
4 hours. The Dreadnought's chassis was being powered up and consecrated when I left. They had not yet begun to wake the sleeper.
The odds are not in our favor, Adhemar said. He has never awoken even once. And he did not go into that sarcophagus willingly, Malek added.
Talos's vox crackled live, interrupting further discussion.
My brother, said Sirion, it is beginning.
Vral strode into the Hall of Remembrance, the roaring lion's head of his right shoulder guard, marking him as one of the Atramenta, sported a pattern of random gashes and cuts, the marks of infrequent repairs after countless battles. The rest of his Terminator warplate followed suit. Scars marred the midnight surface, the lips of these carved chasms gunmetal gray where repainting was in order. Old blood still flaked his gauntlets. Although any matter on his lightning claws was burned away each time he activated them, gore would streak his gauntlets for weeks after he blooded himself in battle. The others misunderstood this as irreverence, as disrespect. It was almost laughable. What greater honor to the machine spirit of his armor was there than to display the wounds it had won in battle? What nobler reverence could be paid than revealing with pride all the scars that had failed to see him slain? Thrusting from his armor's hunched back were trophy racks made from bronze spikes, each with Astartes' helms and their oversized skulls clattering together with every step he took. Vral licked his teeth as his red-tinted displays locked onto every living being in the chamber. There, the servitors tending the silent dreadnought like mindless worshippers. There, the tech adept Deltrian working over a console of arcane lights and switches and levers. There, the new blood of First Claw, Dower Mercutian, standing in the shadows of the great doors to Vral's left. There, Sirion and Zal, bolters held to chests. The Atramentar noticed a warning rune flicker briefly. He was being scanned by an Auspex. Deltrian, surely. Vral gave the watching tech priest an acknowledging nod as he stalked further into the room. The spindly machine creature bowed back in respect. Hateful thing. A curse on the Mechanicum that such filth was necessary to the Legion's operation. Vral was under no illusions about his presence here. The Exalted was playing its game with care, for to oppose Talos openly might incite full-blooded rebellion. What remained of the Tenth would be broken, some following the Exalted, others joining the Prophet. For Vral, the choice was no choice at all, the past or the future. Talos represented the former. What was there in the past but failure and shame? It would be a relief when the Prophet was finally killed. Well did Vral remember his disappointment when the Exalted's plan to whore Talos off to the ruinous powers failed so completely. The Despoiler had allowed the Prophet to escape with no resistance. Abaddon had even failed to kill the two slaves Talos evidently treasured. And Tenth Company was burdened with the Prophet's irritating, anachronistic meddling once again. Maddening, like an unscratchable itch. No, Vral was under no illusions at all. Open conflict was out of the question. It would galvanize Talos's emergent faction. One of the favored Atramentar could never be used. It would be undeniable proof the Exalted was acting against the Prophet. But not wild, unpredictable Vral. Oh no, Vral would be mourned for his vicious temper and choleric humors, while the Exalted waxed lyrical about how he deeply regretted Vral's terrible disruption of the resurrection ritual. His bitterness left him uncontrollable, the Exalted would say. Vral's actions bring shame upon us all. Such disunity. Yes, Vral could almost hear his eulogy spoken now. The Exalted had sent him here to die, spending his life for the good of the warband. So be it. Of course, this new plan to awaken Malkarion had to be put down with tact, with nuance, with subtlety. Vral's claws slid from the sheaths on his gauntlets. They sparked and crackled, wreathed in killing lightning. "Brothers," he called joyously into the vox. "Everyone in this room is going to die." A moment later, he was wading into bolter fire, laughing through the speakers on his tusked helm. Chunks broke away from his trophy racks, the shattered pieces thrown behind. A tusk from his own helm splintered, his chest plate cracked, his knee guard split, spraying ceramite debris to the ground. A storm of bolter fire hacked and chipped at his Terminator warplate. This was almost fun. The three weaklings from First Claw were falling back, presenting unified fire that was doing nothing to suppress the Atramentar's advance. Vral heard Deltrian's mechanical voice bleating over his vox. Why would you do this? This is blasphemy. This chamber is consecrated to the machine god. Would that Vral's armor had any ranged weapons. He could silence the wailing tech priest once and for all. As it was, his lightning claws flared as if in response to his anger. The three Astartes opposing him were backing away, edging towards the still form of Malkarion and unrelenting in their fire. This was irritatingly tactical. Vral knew killing them was only a secondary concern, no matter how pleasurable it would be. He needed to end Malkarion's resurrection once and for all. They stood in the most obvious way of that, simply tearing the dreadnought's form apart with his claws. Ah, well. Vral broke into what approximated a run for an Astartes encumbered by the near-invulnerable shell of Terminator armor. Not making for the defiant Astartes. No, that would be suicide without doing his duty.
Tech priest!
Vral staggered as the withering hail of bolter fire shattered his lower leg plating and interrupted the workings of the servos.
Come, we must talk, you and I.
His stumbling, limping run had a sickening speed all its own. The Reaper-like tech priest did not leave his control console, even as Vral slammed his right claw through the sacred machinery. Disappointingly, nothing exploded. A particularly well-aimed bolt threw his head to the side for a moment, most likely from Zal. That bastard was known for being a wicked shot. But the Astartes held back now. Vral stood among the control consoles, thudding closer, step by step, to Deltrian. They wouldn't risk exploding bolts, damaging the machinery. He raked both claws out to the sides, lacerating more blessed Mechanicum technology. How curious. The defilement made the tech priest weep. He was weeping what looked like oil, running down his skullish silver cheeks in dark tracks. Vral took in this intriguing fact in the span of half a second. He used the rest of the second to ram the four curved knuckle blades, each a meter in length, straight through Deltrian's torso. The tech priest wheezed, cutting off in a blurted babble of static.
Very wise, Vral chuckled, pulling the blades back.
The resistance within the adept's body had felt unpleasant and inhuman. There was little joy in rending apart false machine life. Deltrian fell back, his black robe clutched closed even as he fell to the marble floor. A proximity warning rune flickered a moment too late. One of First Claw was on him. Spinning claws up to guard, Vral faced the other Astartes. Zal's bolter kicked at close range, snapping one of Vral's claws off in a shower of bolt shell debris. His chainsword howled down a heartbeat later.
Just die!
Zal breathed over the vox. His grinding chainsword blade skidded across the Atramentar's hulking armor, biting into surface metal without penetrating deeper. Vral disengaged with a shrug of his shoulders. His Terminator warplate boosted his already inhuman strength far beyond standard Astartes armor. And as to the odds of a chainsword piercing it, well, at least Zal was keen. It made things all the more amusing. Vral raised his right gauntlet, now missing a talon, and caught the chainsword between crackling sword claws on its second descent. The revving blade immediately started eating its way through the softer joint armor and servo fibers of Vral's gauntlets. With a grunt of effort, the Atramentar twisted his arm. The claws sparked with a flare of power as they met the trapped chain blade and severed it with a wrenching snap. Disarmed, Zal leapt back, casting his ruined sword hilt aside as it coughed into death and bringing his bolter to bear again. He didn't fire. A warning rune told Vral why, and he spun to meet the threat of Sirion and Mercutian behind. They came at him together, leaping with gladius blades drawn and reversed like plunging daggers in the hands of assassins. Sirion's stab clattered aside from the dense wall plate, and Vral smashed the Astartes aside with a slash of his claw that tore through Sirion's armor. Mercutian's thrust bit and bit deep. It was a moment of shocking, sickening intimacy, a wrath-inspiring violation, when the two Astartes met one another's gaze through their crimson eye lenses. The gladius was a cold, hateful heaviness in Vral's stomach, and even as his enhanced physiology coped with the wound by sealing the hemorrhage, he felt it being torn open again, with Mercutian yanking the blade upwards. He'd breached a soft joint in the armor. And this was pain. Vral hadn't quite remembered how much it hurt. It had been so long since he'd felt it. Impact struck him from behind in a staccato burst. The rhythm was utterly familiar, a bolter on full auto. Zal was firing, and he needed to free himself from the blade. Vral lifted his claw. The suit answered slowly, sluggish with the damage it was sustaining. Mercutian kept pulling the blade up, carving through Vral's innards, even though the blade was blocked from moving too far by the Atramentar's dense chest plate. He spat blood into his helm and backhanded Mercutian away. The other Astartes snapped back like a puppet with its strings tugged too hard and smashed into the ruined control console. Mercutian was down. Sirion was... Ha! His blow to Sirion had severed the wretch's arm at the elbow. He was still picking himself up, shouting his hate through the vox as he looked for his bolter. Zal. He had to deal with Zal. Zal was always the dangerous one. Blinking blood and sweat from his eyes, Vral turned to do exactly that. He launched forward, claws powering towards Zal like seven short lances. Zal cursed even as he moved, throwing himself to the side, muscles aflame, faster than he had ever moved in his gene-extended life. The tips of Vral's right claws caught him. Zal clenched his teeth as the three blades sliced and penetrated his armor. A moment of agony pulsed through his left thigh, and he crashed to the ground on dead legs. Vral's estimation of the situation changed. Deltrian, that spindly machine freak, was crawling away towards another wall-mounted console. He looked injured. Was that right? Did machine men suffer injury? Damage, perhaps? Sirion was advancing again, one-armed, and gripping his gladius, the pain of his wound doubtlessly swallowed whole by his armor's injection of stimulants and nerve killers directly into the bloodstream and brain. Mercutian was back up as well, unarmed. His blade had broken in the fall, and he must have expended all of his bolter ammunition. Zal, ever defiant, had drawn his bolt pistol and was aiming it from where he lay on the ground, unable to stand with his leg half severed. That was the moment Vral realized he was probably going to win. "Brothers! Brothers!" he laughed. "Who dies first?" "Do your worst," Zal barked, opening fire again. Flashing runes blinked across Vral's display as the bolts hammered into his head and chest plate. Aiming for the neck joint, Vral knew. He was still laughing, still advancing, when Zal's pistol clicked empty. But that sound... Whirr. Vral's bloody face contorted as he scowled at the rising noise. What the hell? It was the sound of a Reaper pattern, double-barreled autocannon powering up. It was followed by the throaty mechanical clunk, clunk, clunk of autoloaders cycling into life. Vral turned in time to see it open fire. When it did, the Hall of Remembrance shook with the sheer volume of the weapon's discharge. Storms ferocious enough to bring down hive towers had done their destructive work with less volume and rage. Servitors too, mind-wiped to cover their ears, suffered ruptured eardrums. The helms of First Claw filtered the sounds to tolerable levels, but every one of them had teeth clenched against the noise. Vral heard it all with damning clarity, because it was happening to him. Six mass-reactive explosive shells, each one capable of killing a rhino transport on its own, smashed into the Atramentar in the space of 3 seconds. The first destroyed his chest plate and would have seen him dead in moments through the horrendous blood loss from his mangled insides. He was spared this death as the second shell killed him instantly, exploding against his tusked helm and annihilating his head and right shoulder. The other four shells impacted and tore the remains to pieces. In 3 seconds, nothing remained of Vral of the Atramentar beyond shards of broken armor and the wounds carried by First Claw. The storm passed. The thunder faded. On ancient servos, the massive form of a bronze-edged, blue-armored dreadnought stepped forward. It was heavy enough to shake the room. The cannon fire had been nothing compared to its howling servo joints and cacophonous tread.
Lord, Mercutian whispered. You're awake,
Sirion breathed.
How?
In a guttural, vox-altered boom, the dreadnought spoke from speakers wrought into its ornate chassis.
I heard Bolter fire.